If it's Thursday afternoon, that means we check in with Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star, talking all things Hoosier hoops, and maybe even a little football if we can get to it this afternoon. And it is basketball season. Glorious day. Pacers tonight will be in the in-season tournament semifinals. Well, that starts now. 5 o'clock Eastern start. We didn't expect that to happen, but the first year for the tournament, some goofy things going on. So we'll keep you updated with that score as the afternoon moves on, at least till 6. Then it's Your Money with David Hayes. NFL football tonight. Westwood One coverage of the Patriots and Steelers. Whew. 7:30 for an 8:15 kick from Three Rivers or the Big Ketchup Bottle or whoever their sponsor is now. Patriots are 2-and. The Steelers lost to the Cardinals at home on Sunday. It's a short week for both. Colts fans will be watching this game intently. Why? Mitch Trubisky will be under center, and the Steelers will come to Indianapolis a week from Saturday. So the Colts heading to Cincinnati Sunday and then back home next Saturday against the Steelers. The tour of the NFC North will get wrapped up there. But Zach Osterman is not here to talk about the NFL. We're here to talk about Hoosier hoops and a team that didn't get off to some great starts earlier in the year. Well, Big Ten play has kind of ratcheted up that the starts. We've seen some good things. We've seen some things we've expected. Maybe a couple of things we haven't expected, but when you're 2-0 at the top of the pile of the Big Ten after two games, there's not a lot to complain about. I don't care if you put perfume on that pig, put some high heels on it as well. 2-0 is 2-0. Good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Well, I'm a lot better when you're sitting on top of the league and you can explain away performances, winning performances that aren't perfect. We know this is a very difficult fan base to make happy, but it wasn't like this team was ranked in the top five preseason and they're not living up to expectations. I think besides the Connecticut game, which it sounds like they've learned from, it's been a pretty solid results-driven start to business and two Big Ten games, two Big Ten wins. I'm not that upset.
Yeah, and I mean, like, there's always context to these things. Maryland is a disaster right now. I mean, just a huge mess. Michigan's lost 4 in a row and was probably, you know, timing can be everything a little bit in this sport. Indiana probably got both of those teams at a good time. And what's funny is, you know, we've talked about Indiana's sort of Big Ten Decembers, you know, gone by and felt like Indiana had, you know, easier draws in December than maybe when we saw the schedule come out this year with Michigan and Maryland in those first two games. And yet Indiana, I think, is probably a little bit fortunate to play those teams when it does. But as you said, results are results. This team is imperfect. This team is still figuring some things out. I do think its last five halves of basketball are pretty encouraging. I thought it was interesting. I didn't make the trip to Ann Arbor. They gave me that one off. But therefore, I was watching on TV, and I thought it was interesting something Mike Woodson said about that UConn game. I think Josh Pastner asked him about it, and he said essentially that UConn showed us, you know, how tough we have to be. They, you know, we played them, and you know, I think maybe Indiana was a little bit hard done by that final score. It was probably more competitive for most of the game before fatigue and foul trouble just kind of overtook Indiana. But Indiana also was never in any real danger of winning that game either. And I just thought it was interesting to hear from Mike Woodson just sort of say they showed us what, you know, essentially the toughness of a team with those kinds of aspirations looks like, the focus, the effort, et cetera. I didn't think Indiana was great against Louisville, but I think starting with Harvard and especially that second half, Indiana has been much better. And I think still some clear areas where Indiana's got to grow. But as you said, you don't give results back. They all count the same at the end of the year, at least to some extent in college basketball. And Indiana has kind of stabilized the season that when you looked at those first three games, plus the Connecticut loss, you did sort of raise an eyebrow at maybe where the complexion of the season and where it might be headed, but Indiana looks in ruder health now.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman on Twitter, joins us every Thursday. And you said the last five halves, and that will take us, let's see, two at Michigan, two Maryland, and the second half against Harvard in Indianapolis. And I don't think it's a terrible coincidence to string together that we'll get to Khalil Ware in a minute here, but McKenzie Mbako, I don't want to say has turned a corner, but scoring 18 points, looks a lot more comfortable. His last three games have been his best three games, and you can argue the competition's been okay in those as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's averaged, I think, a tick under – or a tick, what is the language I'm looking for? A tick over, I think, like about 12 points a game, maybe 13 in each of those three. I think it's also worth pointing out he's got 4 rebounds, 7 rebounds, 8 rebounds. Only once did he have as many as 4 rebounds in a game in IU's first five. And he shot 8 free throws in those first five games, and now he's shot 9 in the last three. My point is these are little signs, but I do think they are signs insofar as, you know, maybe a player understanding a little bit better how they fit, how he fits in Indiana's offense, how he gets on the floor and stays on the floor, but also just, you know, maybe understanding a little bit more of what he's capable of. I think he's been, in particular, really assertive around the rim. I think that, again, is reflective maybe of his reflected in his free throw numbers too. But he's playing a position that, you know, we can probably debate. Is he a three? Is he a four? He's going to play as a three for Indiana. It's clear that's the case. So there's probably also just an element of him needing to figure out, you know, where he goes for his offense, where he finds his shots, you know, where he kind of fits overall. And he's been awfully good. I mean, he's, you know, his in the two conference games, an effective field goal percentage at 60. He's not fouling, but he's drawn a lot of fouls. You know, he's his true shooting percentage is up over 67. That's a factor of being perfect from the free throw line in particular. The point is, it's just kind of, it feels like he's figuring out kind of where he fits in all this, playing a position that maybe, you know, he was going to have to learn on the fly a little bit. You know, there's an element to which you're always just going to have to learn by doing, and I think maybe he is now.
And the other thing is Mike Woodson told us this would happen, and everybody just needs to calm down a little bit. The old soothsayer, not exactly wrong. And again, he's not putting these numbers up against North Alabama and Triton State. He's doing them against Maryland and Michigan, who have a lot of very similar players to his skill set. So I am encouraged by it. And there is something to say about freshmen. And we know those with high expectations have high expectations, especially coming in with the rank system and everything else. So sometimes just give them a minute to bed in. That's not to say McKenzie Mbako is on a upward trajectory from here to the rest of the season. He's going to have some quiet games as well. But last time out, how about Mike Woodson sticking him back in, say, go ahead and make these free throws. That's got to be a great shot in the arm for his confidence, and he made both of them.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, listen, I think Woodson, you know, one of the reasons I think his players appreciate him is, you know, he kind of sticks with what he says he'll do. He plays Gabe Cups down the stretch in those three kind of ugly wins to begin the season in November. You know, he's got CJ Gunn on the floor in, you know, at the business end of the win at Michigan. If you're showing him that you can give him what he needs, you know, again, as a coach, I mean, yes, people, you know, sort of love to bring up how rarely he changes the starting lineups and things like that. But when it comes to kind of giving you the minutes that matter, if you're one of his players, he practices what he preaches. And he, you know, if guys are giving him good minutes, he will stick with them through, you know, through crunch time if he feels like they're the ones playing well. And so I think that, you know, yes, that expresses a level of confidence in the player or a level of trust in the player, but it probably also, without wanting to put words in anybody else's mouth, it probably also makes players feel a little bit more, you know, just sort of empowered. And again, also, I think it's fair to say, like, they can trust their coach and just can, you know, he is going to deliver sort of what he promises when it's time to make the decision about, you know, who should be playing when and who should have what opportunities.
And fans have to remember we're not at practice to see what goes on, doesn't go on, or anything else. So that we've got to give the guy in charge the benefit of the doubt, who is with them all the time, and that's Coach Mike Woodson. Indiana 2-0 in Big Ten play. Zach Osterman Thursday afternoon on the radio with us. C.J. Gunn is another name that jumped off the page on Tuesday night. We saw three-point shots go in. Boy, that would be awfully, awfully helpful. We saw four steals, a career-high 20 minutes. That's, I think, the big number there, Zach, the 20-minute career high. Why? Well, the production he showed. Coach Woodson's going to ride a hot hand, and Gunn earned those minutes by producing on the floor.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's funny the way things can kind of go for a player. I mean, obviously, C.J. Gunn kind of recruited as a shooter out of Lawrence North. You know, he was kind of seen as a sniper, or, you know, whatever term you want to use, I suppose. I would argue that really what's kind of getting him on the floor right now, because he's shooting it a little better than he did last year, but still not really finding his offense consistently off the bench. What I think is getting him on the floor is his defense. And like a lot of freshmen do, there were times where he probably looked a little bit rough around the edges defensively last year. That's not abnormal. That's actually pretty common. That's more or less expected. But, you know, he's listed at 6'6", nearly 200 pounds. You can just sort of stand up near him and recognize his wingspan and you know, all those kind of physical tools. And I think he's just sort of figured out how to leverage more of that stuff. You know, again, it's just two Big Ten games, so you don't want to overstate it too much, but it is 10% of your Big Ten season. And across those two games, he has the highest steal rate in the conference. He's also drawn a fair few fouls, more than he was a year ago, and he's committing fewer fouls than he did a year ago. And so
he's active. He's doing something. Last year, he'd miss a shot and go stand in the corner, or he'd just put his head down. Now he's kind of figured out, hey, okay, I missed a shot. Big deal. I'm going to go get a steal and get it back.
But again, I think that's reflective of, you know, Woodson kind of tells his guys, if you prove that I can trust you in key moments, then I will. And I think it is probably fair to say that Gunn is one of those players that he's gaining greater trust in. And, you know, at some point, I'm sure C.J. Gunn, of all people, would like to see a shot come around a little bit, particularly from behind the three-point line. But I think Woodson will probably look at him and be justified in saying, listen, you know, right here and right now, you're adding real value for us on defense. You keep doing that, and you'll see your playing time go up. You'll see your minutes go up, and you'll see the trust you get in, you know, the crucial moments of a game. You'll see all that go up as well.
Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. Gunn hits two out of three threes last night. First threes he's made in, well, quite a while. So as Mike Woodson told us today in media, I'm not looking backwards. We're looking forwards. And that's exactly how it should be. Take that confidence and run with it. Indiana wins 78-75. Over Michigan at the Chrysler Center in Ann Arbor. Hoosiers start the season off 2-0, and away they go. Let's stay on the guards. Again, we'll get Ware into this discussion. I promise we will. But Indiana basketball talk with Zach Osterman. At Michigan, Gabe Cupps, Trey Galloway, C.J. Gunn. That's it. Three guards. Not a lot of offensive numbers to talk about. Let's see. 3 of 12 and 2 of 6 is what? That's 5 of 18. 0 for 1 is 5 of 19. Points, 17, 19. Okay, it's not a highfalutin offensive backcourt. But if you can get all three of those players defending, I think it also shows how important it is to get Xavier Johnson healthy and back in. It's really hard to play a Big Ten season playing 4-on-5 on offense.
No, that's fair. And I think that's the, you know, I mean, fans, and I, again, we are talking about small sample sizes. I would be really careful sort of making assumptions. I've seen fans say, oh, the team got better when Xavier Johnson went out. I don't think that's necessarily fair or the case. I think it's probably more accurate to just sort of say Indiana figured some things out elsewhere. And, you know, when you watch a game like Michigan and you see, you know, maybe a Gabe Cupps having some moments with Doug McDaniel where he's struggling to stay in front of him. I don't think Cupps played poorly against Michigan, But I think he had to put a lot in to kind of keep McDaniel down. And he did, in fairness. McDaniel's 3-of-17 in that game. So even if, you know, Cups finishes with 4 fouls, he had a couple, you know, a couple moments and McDaniel got the better of him. But ultimately, he was part of an effort that kept one of Michigan's primary scorers, you know, out of that game. He also only had 2 assists. But I think you watch, you know, an effort like that and you just think about, well, what would Xavier Johnson, you know, Michigan probably wouldn't even consider attacking Indiana that way if Xavier Johnson's in the game, if you understand what I'm saying. And as you said, it's also just about depth. I mean, you know, you can't play 3 guards all year long. And Caleb Banks plays a little bit like a guard in some ways, in fairness.
Quit, you know, fouling.
He's well, that's fair, but he's more of a 2-3 than a 3-4 at this stage, I would suggest anyway. As you're right, 7.1 fouls per 40 minutes is not going to sustain itself.
Downright illegal.
I think the flip side is, I think what you have to acknowledge is that Indiana has kind of figured out both its post rotations and how to really kind of, it feels like, you know, when it's Mbako or Ware, or it's Mbako or Walker, or, you know, Ware or Walker, the synergy, if you're going to play 2 bigs, they've got to be really sort of joined up in what they're thinking about and how they're attacking, because you can't have 2 guys that are essentially getting in each other's way, be it for, you know, rebounds, certainly for post-up opportunities and things like that. And I think really what's happened more is Indiana's figured out how those 2 big lineups play well together at both ends of the floor. When you consider that, you know, I'm not standing here asking anybody to believe that any of these players is better than Trayce Jackson-Davis, but I do think that there's probably more skill overall in the front court this year, more sort of diversity of abilities and so forth than there's been in the, you know, the last couple of years. Not necessarily all of it centered on one player, but more just that you've got more guys that are more flexible in more ways. And I think a lot of what's happened in the last maybe, you know, 4 or 5 games is Indiana's front court has started to really figure out how to make those rotations work.
Zach Ostrom with the Indy Star joining us. They do have bodies. They played 9 of them on the road. Everybody scored as well. So that's very, very interesting. And I think when we talk hoops here and when we get into the season, well, the next time we're going to be in the Big Ten is January 3rd. So let's remind everyone of that. Saturday at Auburn in Atlanta, a week Saturday here, Kansas, and then you have the 19th home, Morehead State, the 21st home, North Alabama, and the 29th at home, Kennesaw. So that's what Indiana's dealing with. So I can make the argument, Connecticut, Louisville, Harvard, Maryland, Michigan, that should be a pretty good sample size. And how Indiana has started that run, getting trounced by Connecticut, minus 20 in the rebounding department, there has been tangible improvement. Now, I know not everybody's as good as Connecticut, but we're going to see some Saturdays, this one and next, on some big league basketball players and guys that we'll see if Indiana has really learned from it. I'm excited by the quicker starts. Indiana against Maryland, 16-4, 13-13, timeout. Kevin Willard, and then, you know, leading 28-21 in the first half on the road at Michigan. No one's going to ever accuse Michigan of having a boisterous big-time home court advantage. But some of the problems that we saw earlier, Zach, have, well, at least for a couple games and a couple conference games, have gotten out of the way.
Yeah, I think, you know, we sort of saw the – we saw Maryland and Michigan, I think, in particular, as a stress test for where Indiana was. They'd won all the games they were supposed to win. They lost the one game we kind of expected them to lose. You felt like they looked better. I mean, I thought that Harvard game was going to be a bit of a landmine for them. And obviously they're down 1 at halftime, but they figured out and really take control and kind of cruise through that second half. And sort of then, and again, Maryland and Michigan are where they are, you know, in their own sort of respective journeys. This isn't me trying to make too much out of nothing, but it felt like those 2 games, each in its own way, was, you know, something, like I said, something of a stress test for, hey, but how ready is Indiana with some good, some bad, some really uneven performances? How ready is Indiana to compete in the Big Ten? And then they win both those games. And now you feel like the whole sort of the progression of this team gets a new stress test. Auburn is imperfect, but it's got some really good players, guys like Johnny Broome, Jalen Williams. It's got guys who've played a lot of basketball in an Auburn uniform. KD Johnson is in that mix too. Auburn, I mean, they're ranked, I think, top 20. I think they're 17th in KenPom. On the other hand, they are having a heck of a time shooting the ball right now, even with Broome in the mix. They're coming at this from a week off, but they're also coming at this from a loss at Appalachian State. I'm not completely sure why that game was played in Boone, but that's not my business. So this one's it's who knows what kind of crowd it's going to be. I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but Auburn is firmly a football fan base, even with the success Bruce Pearl's had. I know Indiana has a surprising contingent of alums in Atlanta. I suspect it will be, 50-50-ish inside the State Farm Center. And so you'll at least maybe have the crowd behind you, but you're going to have a more complicated test, certainly, than Michigan or Maryland presented. And then you've got Kansas at home. We all know what Kansas is. The faces change, the expectations don't. They've got Kevin McCullough. They've got Hunter Dickinson. They've got DeJuan Harris. They've got KJ Adams. Nicholas Timberlake's kind of a bit of a wild card right now. He hasn't exactly sort of exploded onto the scene since transferring to Lawrence, but that's one where you're going to look at that game and you're certainly, I think, going to hope that Assembly Hall can pick you up a little bit in a game like that. And so, again, it's just kind of these next two games are a different kind of stress test, because I don't think anybody would be surprised if the NCAA tournament selection show was held tomorrow. I don't think anybody would or should be surprised if Indiana wasn't in the field. They've had some... their metrics don't look good. Their sort of rankings don't look good. They've had too many closer than they should have been kind of wins. But they haven't done anything to hurt themselves either. And if you could grab one of these next two games, Auburn on a neutral floor or Kansas at home, and then not do anything sort of self-destructive over Morehead State, North Alabama, and Kennesaw State, then you've gotten everything you needed out of November and December. Even with the loss to Connecticut, even if you split Auburn and Kansas, you've got some decent wins. You started yourself off 2-0 in the Big Ten. You're allowed to tell yourself a story of, hey, we were, really not ready when the season started. We were still a work in progress, but we kind of rode out the worst of our growing pains. We stuck together. We won some close games. And now we can kind of, stride into the latter portion, or not the latter portion, but I guess the meat of Big Ten play with the confidence of a team that's pulled itself together into something competitive. I don't say you have to win one of these two games, but if you don't, you're going to have a lot of ground from an NCAA tournament perspective, a lot of ground to make up in a Big Ten that is not exactly rough and tumble. Indiana's got some, playing Ohio State twice will help. Playing Purdue twice will help,
Illinois.
I think they play Wisconsin twice, but there's also Minnesota's 100 in the KenPom right now. Penn State's 123, Maryland's 74. Those are all teams they play.
Indiana was 71.
Those are all teams they play home and away. So, you're going to have to sort of make your own luck a little bit if you can't win one of these next two games, but it will be kind of in the process of winning or losing these two that it feels like maybe Indiana learns the last of what it needs to about itself from these 2 months, specifically in terms of how ready it is to try and fight to get back into the NCAA tournament picture once the new year starts.
Scores last night, Minnesota trailed at home by 15, lost Dawson Garcia, scored 52 second half points to beat Nebraska 76-75. 76-65, excuse me. Indiana will reopen their Big Ten schedule January 3rd in Lincoln. I'll add to that lovely description there. Indiana was 74th, and Michigan was 51st in the Ken Pom rankings before Tuesday night's game. So I don't know if the Ken Pom rankings need a little bit more time in the oven. I don't know how that works, but Indiana, add to all that you brought up, and then add in they have a Big Ten road win. We haven't sat here over the last 4 or 5 years and stacked up a ton of Big Ten road wins. Your first two games in the Big Ten are at Michigan, win, and then you go to Nebraska. That is not That is not impossible to be 2-0 in your first two Big Ten road games. That is absolutely an opportunity. Ohio State won last night. They beat Miami of Ohio by 20 in Columbus. And in overtime, Julian Reese had 24-15. Boy, he sure didn't against Malik Renew, Khalil Ware, and the rest here in Bloomington last Friday. But Maryland wins 81-75. So they hold their home court advantage in the Big Ten as well. Let's talk about Khalil Ware and in the Big Ten front court. Bruce Pearl in his press conference today said that Khalil Ware and Malik Renew, that's the best front court in the Big Ten. That's high praise. I know these teams are getting together Saturday at 2 o'clock, but they're on notice. They're not hiding from anybody. And the best shooting team in the Big Ten, Indiana, shot 52% on the road at the Chrysler Center Tuesday night, and a lot of it was due to those two big fellas. But Ware has been excellent. You posted a really cool chart on Twitter late on Tuesday night showing Ware's production. We talked about it on the show yesterday with Novak. But the proof's in the pudding, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, the Khalil Ware thing, I don't think we're ever going to get a firm sort of explanation of exactly what happened. And I'm not trying to sort of vilify Dana Altman. I think that it is kind of difficult to look at Ware this year and last year and just not and understand why. Why his numbers were so much worse at Oregon. Now, somebody did point out when I posted that graphic, he's listed at 32 pounds heavier in Indiana. And I obviously did not watch a lot of him at Oregon last year. I don't know if that's accurate. Sometimes weights don't get updated. Sometimes guys grow a little bit, especially I think taller players sometimes grow a little bit late into their frame. We just sit here, like he's added 17 points to his effective field goal percentage. He's added almost 6 points to his defensive rebounding percentage. His assist rate is up. His turnover rate is down. But the only thing that's dipped is his block rate. And I would argue that's probably because he's just playing in the front. First of all, it kind of felt like, based on some of the comments I've read from Dana Altman, like Oregon just tried to turn him into a rim protector in the latter part of last season. And second of all, he's just got a really good front court around him. He doesn't have to block everything because Indiana's not allowing a ton of quality shots at the rim as is. He's drawing a ton of fouls. He's put 10 points on his free throw rate. He's shooting a little bit worse from the free throw line, but that's because he's taken so many more. He's got 38 attempts through 8 games this season. He only attempted 66 in 35 games last season. And he's finishing more than 12% more of his twos. I mean, he's just like, it is kind of hard to understand. And I think the other thing, and I noted this in my talking points column this morning, it's not like he was an unknown quantity. Like, he came to Oregon as a top 10 recruit, potential NBA draft pick. It's not like it should have been a surprise that maybe he had some skills or that there were some rough edges that needed polishing, but that, hey, this, like OG Anunoby is a good example of a player that really didn't play a lot early in his Indiana career. He kind of got into the rotation when James Blackman Jr. got hurt, and suddenly you said, hey, this guy's raw, but there's a lot of talent there. Khalil Ware, there was no secret as to the quality of player he was coming out of high school. And it is a little difficult to understand sometimes when you watch just how dominant he could be in different ways. I mean, he only had 13 points on Tuesday, but he has 8 rebounds, only 2 turnovers, only 2 fouls. He's very good at playing without fouling. He's reminiscent of Trayce Jackson-Davis, actually, in that respect. And he came up with 2 or 3 of probably the 5 most important defensive plays in the second half against Michigan. So he can be dominant in terms of the scoring, the rebounding, et cetera. But he can also just be dominant. You know, Indiana basically closed him on Olivier, and I'm not going to try and pronounce his last name because I botched it badly the other day. Basically used Ware as a closer on him after he had that stretch of just kind of reeling off baskets early in the second half. And then obviously he's the one that blocks the jumper and then tips the inbounds pass. He can affect games in so many different ways. You know, it's like talking about a 5-tool baseball player, and it's just sort of surprising that you know, how unsuccessful it seemed like Oregon was at tapping into those tools.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, joining us. Ware has been efficient on the glass as well. But this Indiana team doesn't quote-unquote rebound well. They're not in the bottom. They're not in the top. You would just think of the looks test of Renew and Ware and Banks and Mbako and the gang. It seems like they're holding their own, but the Connecticut game showed us perhaps a different story. On the road at Michigan, 30-30, even on the glass, and they were plus one on the offensive glass. That will not hurt their chances moving forward if they can hang around in those departments. Can this team rebound better?
I think Mike Woodson's first piece, and I don't know if this maybe goes back a little bit to what he said about that UConn game. I think Mike Woodson's first concern is just that they're rebounding better than they were. I mean, they were not rebounding well enough for a team of their tools and a team of their talent early in the season. But those numbers have improved. Undeniably, they've improved. Again, it's two games. I understand that. But they've only played eight. So, if we don't have a large sample size to analyze this team, period. The best we can do is say they've played 25% of their regular season and 10% of their Big Ten season. And in that stretch, their turnover rate is up, but their offensive rebound rate is up dramatically. And their opponent offensive rebound rate, which is essentially just a way of saying, it's not quite the same thing, but it's essentially just a way of saying how well Indiana is preventing offensive rebounds, therefore how well Indiana is rebounding defensively to close out possessions. Their opponent offensive rebound rate through two Big Ten games is down more than 4 points as well. So it's reflective a little bit. I completely acknowledge of who they played, but it's also reflective of, I think, some improvement. And I would look at, we're not here to talk about Maryland. I was alarmed watching Maryland. I don't know what's going on there, and it is not my business. I can't remember watching a college basketball game and just thinking to myself, in all seriousness, no tongue in cheek, I'm not sure how hard this team is trying. But Maryland has guys with size like Julian Reese.
Yeah, 24 and 15 last night.
Yeah, Dante Scott has been around forever. Jordan Geronimo, Indiana fans will remember how good he can be when he kind of turns on his focus, particularly defensively. And then, Michigan, I don't think is as good in the front court as Indiana, but, it's still starting or bringing off the bench a group that includes Terrace Reed at 6'10", 255, Will Cheddar, who was really good in that game, at 6'8", 245. Again, we talked about the Tennessee transfer earlier on, it's not like Indiana's been better rebounding the basketball just because they've played some bad teams. Michigan is 42nd in the country in offensive rebound rate right now. They have been, whatever their results, they have been hurting teams on the glass, and Indiana did not let them in that game. And again, I suspect some of this is maybe just players getting better and gelling some things together, but some of it is also, I think it is fair to say, reflective of a team that maybe got a bit of a wake-up call with the way that it was rebounding, or maybe more accurately, not rebounding early in the season and responding to that.
Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. We're discussing the Indiana 2-0 start to the Big Ten season. Maryland shot at the Simon Scott Assembly Hall from three-point distance, 2 of 16. Indiana held Michigan on their home floor to hit 4 of 17. That was a glaring error earlier in the year. No problems are ever solved. There's been a defensive commitment, it looks like, to make sure that gets slowed down a little bit. And through a couple games, that's positive. On the flip side, and I'll let you address both, obviously, Indiana leads the league in field goal percentage, 52% on the floor at the Chrysler Center, and Indiana 52 points in the paint. Heck, Michigan knew that's where it was coming from, and they still struggled to stop them.
There's two things about that. First of all, again, if you want to talk about the two Big Ten games in comparison to the season overall, Indiana has allowed opponents to shoot about 32.3% from three for the whole season, which is 154th, according to KenPom nationally. It's not a great number, but it's not terrible. It's above the average. There are 362 teams in Division I. It is above the cut line. Their two Big Ten opponents have only shot 18.2% combined from behind the three-point line. So that, again, some of it is probably the teams you're playing, but some of it is also probably – how much you've sharpened up what was a really big sort of weakness for you early in the season. And I also think, too, these are kind of two disconnected thoughts, but I think to your point about points in the paint, you know, Indiana has gotten to a place where it's really geared up this front court. If we just go back through the last few games, you know, Michigan, Malik Renew, 15-6, Kalel Ware, 13-8, McKenzie Mbako, 11-4. You rewind to Maryland, it's Kalel Ware, 18-14, McKenzie Mbako, 13-7, Malik Renew, 11-5. You even go back as far as like the Harvard game, and again, kind of a weird game, neutral floor, no Xavier Johnson, but Kalel Ware, 28-8, McKenzie Mbako, 18-8, Malik Renew, 17-4. Everybody knows this is what Indiana does. Like, everybody who plays Indiana, and you mentioned the Bruce Pearl quote earlier, everybody who plays Indiana this season is going to have a very clear-eyed understanding of what makes Indiana good and where Indiana's going to go for its points. This, you know, they need to, and they may well shoot better from three, but nobody is going to this team's not going to become just some sort of, you know, snipe, you know, it's not going to be a team of snipers by February. That they're probably not going to be a prolific three-point shooting team anytime soon. But if you know what they're, where their bread is buttered, if you know what they're going to try and do to you, and you still give up 78 points at home, and you look at the distribution of those points, again, going back through these games, you know, Ware was really good against Harvard. He was really good against Maryland. Mbako was better against Harvard and Maryland. But then against against Michigan, it's Malik Renew is the Indiana's leading scorer. If you know where Indiana's going to go for its points and you still can't stop them, that's pretty impressive. I mean, Indiana finishes 27-49 on twos against what is not, again, a particularly small Michigan team, you know, and a team that will have known exactly where Indiana was going to take the ball and still couldn't slow them down.
Nope. And that's why you should be encouraged, Hoosier fans. And again, no one's reserving a parade route. Nobody is having the six banner custom made. 2-0 is a lot better than 0-2, and even better than 1-1. And I think Indiana deserves some credit for going on the road, down a man. You know, they won there last year in an absolute dogfight. You were there last year, right? 62-61. No Xavier Johnson in that game either.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that Jalen Hood-Schifino had one of those. Was that a quiet game then? I can't remember off the top of my head, but a lot of people just have already.
He was quiet, and then I think he came alive a little bit, just a little bit in the second half.
I thought he hit a big shot late, but he didn't have a ton of stuff going on. Maybe 10 points. Again, but my greater point is there's a lot of people that have written this team off because they don't have a Trayce Jackson-Davis or Jalen Hood-Schifino. I'm going to point out, this time last year, Jalen Hood-Schifino was getting freshman minutes. Xavier Johnson didn't break his foot until next weekend at Kansas when we were there at Lawrence for that game. And then Hood-Schifino got into the heavy minutes. So we can take a deep breath. But I think when you're 2-0, you have to understand why you're 2-0. And that's what Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star does. He paints a fantastic picture of how Indiana has gotten that way. The one thing else I will point out from an offensive side of things, Indiana isn't exactly getting to the free throw line 100 times a game in Big Ten play either. They would like
They're holding their own. I mean, they're doing it about as well as anybody. They were seventh across these, you know, these only a couple teams only played one game. They've played two. Like Michigan's got Iowa, I think, this weekend. You know, they're seventh in conference play alone in free throw rate, which is your free throw attempts as a percentage of your total field goal attempts. They are 12th nationally in that statistic. And some of that's going to be goosed up by the early games, but you know, you kind of consider, I mean, like they actually shot more free throws than UConn in that game. Free throws were a big part of what helped them close out Louisville in the Louisville game. You know, even a game like Maryland makes one more free throw, but free throws kind of help Indiana balance out the fact that they're not hitting a ton of threes. Now, Maryland didn't hit a ton of threes either. Maryland's kind of a disaster, as we discussed, but you know, it's not like Indiana's awful. And it is worth saying, too, you know, again, it's going to be interesting to see how easy or not it is to kind of build an NCAA tournament resume in a Big Ten that is not in great shape right now. But I think Indiana, just to give people kind of a sense of how volatile some of this stuff is this time of year, Indiana debuted at, I think, in the 130s in the net rankings, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I'm looking for it right now. I mean, it was like maybe 136, something like that.
While you're looking for that, I will interject that Indiana does not have to explain itself for being 1-1. They're 2-0, and that does matter. And it matters with one of those games being on the road as well. So you can only play who you're scheduled. And again, it's not a beauty contest because you didn't win each game by 25 points. But I will point out, Indiana was up 58-35 against Maryland with 11 minutes to go. They did put up a 23-point lead. Indiana was up 28-21 when Khalil Ware got his second foul in the first half. And the Hoosiers were down 59-53, 8:59 to go, half number two, and missing a senior guard on the road, and found a way to come back and win. So there might not be the copy and paste down the road, but they've shown themselves they can dig out of it, and they can on the road and bring up a victory and not do it at full strength. So with a team that's maybe, I don't want to say a little fragile, but not huge on experience across the board, that's a big deal for a team that, as you mentioned, was not in the top 10 preseason, was not even in the top 25 preseason, and checked in at 100 and whatever in the rankings.
It was 137.
There's 340 basketball teams, kids, just to give you a little.
Yeah, well, it was 137, which is not a good net rating at all. They're already up to 103, and I think that's particularly, I mean, you know, they have no quad one wins. They have one quad two win. That's going to be Michigan. But the more sort of, I guess, I don't know what the instructive probably is the thing to the way to describe it, is that these rankings are very volatile early in the season. Indiana's gained 34 spots more or less by beating Michigan. You know, the Maryland game won't have done a lot for them. Indiana has gained, 34 spots in the net by essentially proving they can go on the road and win a conference game. So, again, we're kind of a long way from Indiana being where it wants to be, in terms of, or where it's going to need to be if it wants to be an NCAA tournament team this season. But as you said, you don't have to give back your seven wins. You don't have to explain why you let an opportunity slip away at Michigan. And now Auburn and Kansas are undeniably, as I said before, a stress test, but they're also an opportunity, because if you win one of those games, either one of those games, Kansas at home is just a boon, because Kansas is always going to be a great win no matter where you get it. And Auburn is an even bigger opportunity because you're playing them on a neutral floor rather than at home. Then suddenly your resume does look a fair bit better, as long as you don't lose those last three games heading into the new year.
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star beat writer for Hoosier Hoops and Hoosier Football. We turn our attention to football here for the last part of our program today. Where is the Hoosier football coaching staff? As the portal turns, join us next week as the portal will stop in magical place. All that's going on right now. Kurt Cignetti was introduced to the crowd Friday night, had some interesting words for our friends up Interstate 65 and Michigan and Ohio State. We've also learned that he will not be involved with James Madison's bowl game. Where are we on a football part of our afternoon here, buddy?
So his staff is complete. I think the last piece was, I think Football Scoop had it first. The last sort of piece of his staff that it seemed likely it was going to be a corners coach based on how everything else was kind of arrayed. And, it was. Indiana's going to bring in, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Rod Ojong, from Charlotte. So you've got, if by my count, I think six assistants coming with him from James Madison, six assistants, four on offense, two on defense. He retained Bob Bostad to coach offensive line. He brought in Buddha Williams from Colorado State. He and Pat Koontz, who's coming over from James Madison, former Ron Colley grad, former Notre Dame player, former IUGA, they'll kind of share the defensive line. And then Ojong and Ola Adams, who was most recently a defensive analyst and kind of their analytics director at Penn State, but has also been, was the defensive coordinator for a handful of years at Villanova, and then took a job with the Broncos in 2022. And I'm guessing just got let go when the staff turned over to Sean Payton. So, you know, some appeal there. I think it's fair to say, you know, quite a few younger coaches that are, you know, have kind of moved up the ranks steadily and fairly quickly. You know, a player like, or a coach like Ojong was a defensive analyst at Georgia as recently as 3 years ago, and then went from there to Buffalo to Charlotte. Now he's coming to Indiana. Kuntz is, you know, I mean, he's very young. I think he's my age, more or less, maybe a year older. So he's only 36, 37. You know, the other coaches that Indiana, that Cignetti brought with him to Indiana, I think, you know, like John Miller was, I want to say graduated from college about 6 or 7 years ago. Tino Sunseri played at Pitt, was playing pro ball 10 years ago. So he's not that old. And Mike Shanahan, his offensive coordinator, is pretty young as well. Bryant Haynes, another one. He was a GA under Kevin Wilson at Indiana. It's a fairly young staff. It's a staff that clearly there was a bit of a priority of trying to bring in guys that had worked with Cignetti before, you know, maybe just carry some things over smoothly from James Madison. But, you know, some of the outs, if you want to call them outside hires, the non sort of transfer over from JMU is interesting, particularly Bob Bostad staying on.
Now that the staff is complete, we have also seen through the folks who follow it, Indiana with offers being made, Indiana with re-offering some guys from the Tom Allen recruiting class. We've seen some folks from JMU decommit and be offered by Indiana. When the music stops, everybody has to have a seat or you're out. What's next for Cignetti and his staff? Well, I would guess, if Scott Dolson brought in a guy that knows quarterbacks and the last four offensive players of the year or players of the year with James Madison, whatever conference they've been in, have been the quarterback from that school, well, that seems an easy dot for me to connect.
Yeah, I mean, like, listen, there's a lot that is obviously, you know, this is the time of year anymore where the ball is kind of bouncing all over the place if you're a football coach, if you're a football program. I think that what are the priorities right now? Indiana's got, I think, fewer than 50 projected scholarship players. So the priorities are kind of all over the place. On the other hand, with the portal and the ease of use of the portal, that's just kind of what you have to expect in a modern day coaching change. Because there are going to be a lot of guys that just sort of say, I might need to examine a future outside this program. Now there's going to be a handful of guys that want to take their value into the market and see what they can get. There's going to be some guys, whether it's in the portal or I think we've already seen some high school players that maybe the new staff kind of evaluates and says, you know, we might just want to go in a different direction here. You know, if I had something earlier in the week about kind of portal priorities, I think one of the big ones is going to be a quarterback. I think you mentioned Jordan McLeod, who was Sun Belt Player of the Year with quarterbacking James Madison last year. It is worth saying, if I'm not mistaken, McLeod has confirmed he'll play in the bowl game. So my assumption would be that, you know, his and maybe I'm wrong, but my guess is his recruitment won't really heat up until after the Armed Forces Bowl on December 23rd. Again, maybe I'm wrong, because this window does go through kind of early January. Maybe he'll try to squeeze some visits in before then. I don't know that he hasn't been tweeting out all his offers. I do believe Indiana's offered him. So, you know, he could be one of the solutions. Maybe he's only got 1 year of eligibility left, but maybe kind of a stopgap option as somebody else has developed behind him. I think offensive line is a big one. Your entire starting offensive line is either in the portal or the NFL draft after last season. Wouldn't hurt you if it was possible to get a couple of those guys out of the portal. You know, I think a Carter Smith, for example, a Khalil Benson, the two guys that wound up being your pretty steady starting tackles this season, I think it would be valuable to retain those guys at minimum. I think Indiana has been hit, you know, noticeably hard in the secondary, particularly at safety. And, you know, it won't be quite the same defense. You know, Tom Allen called that position the Husky. My understanding from reading some different things is Cignetti does kind of play with a bit of a free rover defensively. And again, different coaches will use that position differently, but plays with kind of a somebody who's out there just to be sort of versatile and flexible. So, you know, do you want to try and get a Jordan Shaw back? Obviously, Lewis Moore and Phillip Dunham statistically were two of your most productive safeties a year ago. They're both in the portal. So the point is there's a lot to address, but the flip side is I would say there's a lot of opportunity as well, because we've talked about Indiana's sort of recommitment or firmer commitment to NIL, and it's not like the portal is short of other options. We've seen offers go out to a number of corners, a number of running backs, you know, a couple wide receivers. I imagine Indiana may also be trying to hold a spot open for Donovan McCulley, though his recruitment is certainly taking on a pretty exclusive feel. Penn State and Michigan are both involved. So the point is, this is, you know, Cignetti's been tweeting a lot of pictures from, you know, 5:30, 6 a.m. In his office. This is the time of year where you are even more so in some ways than the season, because there's so much roster building to be done. This is the time of year where you are kind of grinding through a lot of stuff in a short space of time.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, talking a little football here to get wrap things up. Boisterous applause with the microphone in his hand on Friday night. How did you see that one coming?
No, and I think he admitted in a radio interview earlier this week that he didn't either. He kind of didn't know what he was going to say until he was handed the microphone. I mean, listen, this is the one time in a coach's tenure when you can get away with that. Everybody is kind of, everyone is excited. Nobody's lost a game. Nobody's lost a recruitment. All your fans are kind of, you know, filled with the joys of spring. And this is probably the one time when you can just sort of get away with that, and everybody will more or less just say, yeah, well, you know, he's a new guy. He's trying to make an impression, whatever. But it, you know, I'm sure it did not hurt that, you know, you had a pretty much full student section and all that. And you kind of gave him probably what they wanted most, which was a real sort of, I guess, mission statement, for lack of a better term, about where Kurt Cignetti wants to take Indiana.
Bulletin board material for the home team is good too, right? I know Purdue will put it up there. They're small time. They'll make sure it's a big deal up there. They'll shake their keychains and say, "IU sucks" on everything they do. But if Indiana says it one time, all of a sudden they want an inquiry from the authorities above. All right, before I let you go, the biggest question I get on the street, and when I run into folks and they say, "Well, you get all these smart people on your show to help you out because you don't know anything," I said, "Well, that's the whole point." The NIL deal, we heard we puffed our chest out and we said, we're going to raise all this money, and if you do all this before midnight, we're going to match it. Can you just take my listeners through who is matching what and how it's a three-way call. How does Indiana, the collective, and the prospective student athlete, how does this work?
So, I mean, there is kind of a technical answer to that, and then there's a real world answer to that.
Give me the technical first, and then we will work back.
The technical is, you know, that the collective can be partnered with the university now, but it has to operate separately. That, you know, that you can't, and I'm not even necessarily sure that every school breaks this rule, but you can't sit down and say, this is literally the number that our collective will set you up with. But you can sit down and say, these are the kinds of NIL opportunities that we have at Indiana. This is the sort of money that would probably be available to you if you were interested in some of these things. And it's obviously a very short walk from, you know, bringing your NIL guy into the visit.
Who is the NIL guy? That's another huge question.
Well,
who,
in this case, it's Hoosiers for Good and Hoosiers Connect.
Who is that?
Those are the two. They're the same organization, essentially. That is Indiana's official partner collective. It's backed by, among other people, Pete Yonkman, who is president of the Cook Group. It is the official collective, which means that anytime you see Indiana sort of call for fundraising around NIL, it's to one of those two. Hoosiers for Good is the side that sets up the NIL deals, you know, through with charitable organizations. The Hoosiers Connect side is more targeted at businesses, you know, some options for smaller businesses, some options for bigger businesses. You can basically build out subscriptions that you pay a certain amount monthly and you get, you know, basketball tickets, you get signed autographed footballs and basketballs, you get, access that a lot of people don't get, that sort of thing.
So the question I get is, who from the collective talks to the head coach, then talks to the person? Is that an agent, lawyer? Who is that person?
I think it's going to be someone in terms of, again, this is one of those things where unless the rule is changed in a way I don't understand, you can't bring, whoever kind of the point person for like negotiations with your collective is, you can't bring them into recruiting visits in theory. But there's not a lot of difference between that and saying, hey, here are some NIL opportunities we expect, some of our players to have this year. Because these deals are all typically kind of 1-year deals, and they can't be contingent upon enrollment. So you can put a guy on an NIL deal. If he transfers, you can't say, oh, you're gone now, we're taking it away. But that's why a lot of these deals tend to be 1-year deals, is because you sort of recognize that everybody's in the current landscape anymore. Everybody's kind of playing a season and then reassessing where they are and where the program is and where the opportunities are. So again, unless I'm mistaken, you can't bring like an NIL sort of like representative, let's say, to an in-home visit, but you can connect them. You can say, this is, if you want to hear more about this, this is the right person to talk to. And then there can just kind of be essentially almost a negotiation or an arrangement of, this is what we're going to be able to do, yada, yada, yada. And I mean, and Cignetti, in his own introductory press conference, basically just kind of talked about NIL a little bit like a payroll. He said, you've got this figure, this overall amount of money. If somebody leaves, that's a little bit more. You have to basically put valuations on who you want to, who's worth what and who to offer what. And if you give this player more, then that's less to go back to the rest of the roster. But again, if a guy says no, he transfers out, he goes somewhere else, whatever, well, then that's money that goes back into your pool. It's thinking about it in many ways like a payroll, essentially. And it's become a lot less sort of clandestine even than it was when NIL started, because the NCAA has kind of allowed for this growing relationship between collectives and schools that I think in fairness has probably made the whole process a bit more sane on the average. Because if the school's going to be directly involved, at first schools were just basically said, we don't want to know anything. We don't want to be involved. We don't want to, we have absolutely no interest in this side of the game, so to speak. And what they found fairly quickly was that it all kind of turned into chaos if they did that, that it just sort of descended into this, murky, lawless kind of market that was hugely skewed and not at all stable. And I think actually bringing the collectives in with the schools and allowing them to partner sort of, more directly, I think really kind of helped stabilize, at least in kind of the day-to-day, the average. I'm not talking about the big-time QBs or the five-star recruits, but, what you're doing with, the bulk of your roster, the guys that may be on an NIL deal but aren't necessarily going to be on $200,000, $400,000, something like that. I think this has allowed a lot of that to stabilize, even if it still throws up some murky questions here and there.
So the Hoosiers for Good, Hoosiers Connect, has a pool of employees who are well-versed in how all this works to negotiate deals with private businesses. And then come together and meet with prospective student athletes, and then they sit down and draw out the plans based on what the athlete thinks their value is, based on what the NIL collective people think their value is, and they work that all out, all without the athletics having anything to do with it, to keep themselves hands clean and out of it. Do I have that kind of right?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I think probably the most sort of major change is the firewall has moved between the department and the NIL operation. And when I say operation, I want people to know that most places we're not talking about some 500 employee setup. Like, it's just like the people that know the rules, the people that make sure that you're staying, you're staying north of the rules, all that kind of stuff. The firewall was in a different place between the department and that sort of activity when all of this started than where it is now. And that's what's changed, is the NCAA has allowed departments to work much more hand in glove with their partner. You have to declare like an official partner collective. And because Hoosiers for Good and Hoosiers Connect are essentially two operations under the same roof. And again, I don't know that there's even like a hard and fast office space for this. Maybe I'm wrong. But because those two organizations essentially exist under the same sort of blanket structure, then Indiana sort of declares those its official partner collectives, and that one-to-one relationship can be a little bit more intimate, if you understand what I'm saying.
I'm trying to. Thanks for joining us every Thursday and making light of the situation, because it is it's organic. It is developing and moving and growing and shrinking and all kinds of things. And we'll have all summer to talk about all the next if we make it to summer, of course, all the next steps that are going on there. Go-to sub at Publix is?
Well, I have my own order. I just get Publix turkey, yellow American cheese, pickles, mayonnaise, and mustard on white bread.
No vegetables, huh? You stud. You're a stud.
Well, pickles a vegetable.
Kind of. They're the rogue of the vegetable family. They're more entertainment than they are nutritious. I would always go with the Italian. Why? Because you couldn't get a good Italian around here for a really long time. I miss Publix. I will look for you on TV Saturday at the State Farm Center in Atlanta. Hoosiers in Auburn, 2 o'clock on ESPN2. Busy day for basketball fans. 4 o'clock, Big Ten Network. Change it on over. Jersey Mike's Arena. I might get that for lunch since I can't get Publix. IU women's basketball will be on the road against Rutgers, so 2-4 on Saturday. Here on the airwaves, we'll have the Army-Navy game from Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. That'll be our coverage starting at 2. Safe travels, my friend. We'll talk to you next week before the Jayhawks and Hunter Dickinson and Bill Self are in town.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always, Glass.
That's Zach Osterman, IndyStar.com.